This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation and song with a Broadway star, or a multimedia banjo and guitar festival honoring a local jazz master, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Broadway superstar, Emmy Award-winning actress, Tony nominee, and voice of hit Disney films, Liz Callaway, debuts in the Broadway at NOCA series with special guest actor Brian Batt. They'll join host and music director Seth Rudetsky in a one-night-only evening of song and impromptu stories. Liz Callaway joins us by phone. Hello, Liz.
Hi there. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you. This is your debut with the Broadway at NOCA series. What attracted you to this intimate stage setting and to New Orleans?
I'm just so happy to be, you know, coming back to New Orleans. I've performed there a couple of times, but never for this series. Mark Cortali invited me, and I've worked with Seth Rudetsky many, many times, and we have such a great time together. So I'm thrilled to be coming there, and I understand it's a wonderful venue. I'm so happy my friend Brian Batt is going to be our special guest as well.
How did you and Brian meet?
We actually met doing Cats on Broadway.
Oh.
He had already been doing the show. You know, I was a little nervous. It was my first time doing Cats, and he was so sweet, and we just hit it off, and we've stayed in touch over the years, but we've never actually sung together. So that's kind of fun, the idea of, you know, performing together again after all these years.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the evening will unfold? Do you know what you'll be singing together with Brian?
No, not yet, actually. We've been kind of going back and forth with some ideas. In fact, this morning I wrote to him and I said, okay, let's decide what we're doing. And we have some different ideas of what we're going to do. And then solo-wise, one of the fun things about working with Seth is he, you know, he does an interview and he has me sing a lot of interesting songs from my career and tell fun stories. I've done this several times with Seth, but even I won't know necessarily what I'm doing until he interviews me and I go, oh, we're doing this song. So, you know, I'm sure I'll be doing Memory from Cats and a song from Anastasia and lots of other songs.
Now, Liz, you wear many hats. Let's begin with your Broadway roles. You were a Tony nominee for your role in Baby. You starred in Cats and Miss Saigon. How did those roles come about for you?
Well, Baby was pretty early in my career. I met the director and lyricist, Richard Maltby, by auditioning for another show. And he said, oh, you're perfect for this part I'm writing for a show called Baby. And so I actually got to know the composers, and that show I didn't actually really have to audition for. Miss Saigon and Cats were a little more traditional. My agent will call me and say, hey, they'd like to see you for this show. Probably the most unusual thing is when I auditioned for Miss Saigon, I was actually 4 months pregnant. And I told my agent, don't tell them I'm pregnant because they won't see me. I said, I should audition in case someday they need a replacement, and never thinking that I would actually get the part. But they wanted me, and they said, we'll work around your pregnancy. And so I started rehearsals 8 months pregnant,
wow.
And my son was born a month before the first preview. I had a 2-week maternity leave, and then I was back at work. That was my equivalent of climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround.
Yes.
Let's go a little bit further back in your career. When did you know that entertaining and show business was your calling?
I grew up in a very musical household. My mom was a singer and a voice teacher and a pianist, and my sister Anne was, you know, always singing. I think she always knew she wanted to be a singer. I was incredibly shy, and I didn't sing in front of anyone unless, you know, if my family left the house, then I loved to sing, but just not in front of anyone. When I was 8, I remember thinking to myself, well, if everything else fails in my life, I can fall back on a singing career, which is crazy. But I knew I could sing. I just thought, oh, I wanted to do, like, be a sports journalist or something different. I didn't start doing theater until I was in high school. Around the same time, my parents got divorced. And so theater became this really important thing in my life. And I loved being part of a cast and the family feeling you had. So I decided, ooh, I love this. I guess I better get over my shyness because this is what I want to do. So it was more for the social reasons that I kind of went, ooh, I want to do this. But I think I've always known that I loved singing and musical theater. It was a little different path for me.
How and when did you make your Broadway debut?
I made my Broadway debut in 1981. I was in the chorus of Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along. I think I was 20 when we opened. I was cast when I was 19. And originally, I was cast as the swing, but then I ended up being in the chorus. It was an amazing experience. The first Broadway show I ever saw was Stephen Sondheim's Company, which I loved. And so to have my Broadway debut be a Sondheim show, directed by Hal Prince, playing at the Alvin Theater, which was actually the same theater Company played at. Merrily actually only ran for 2 weeks, which was devastating, but it also was a great lesson. I was working with the best people in the business on something that wasn't a success, so it really prepared me for a life in show business, the ups and downs.
Wow. Now, let's talk about some of your big hits, some of your big numbers.
I think what people probably know me best from would be my song from Baby, which is The Story Goes On, which SiriusXM, God bless them, play all the time. So when if I'm doing a concert in like North Dakota and people say, oh, I love your song from Baby, I'm like, how do you know my song from Baby? And it's all because of SiriusXM. Journey to the Past from Anastasia was the Oscar-nominated song I sang in the movie. Meadowlark is a song a lot of people associate with me, and evidently there is a request that I sing it in New Orleans, so I will be very happy to be singing that song.
When I was a girl, I had a favorite story of the meadowlark who lived where the rivers wind. Her voice could match the angels in its glory, but she was blind. The lark was blind.
It's by Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Wicked and Godspell and Pippin, and it's from a show called The Baker's Wife that he wrote, and it's a fantastic song.
Now, in addition to Broadway, you have been the singing voice of several Disney films. Tell us about the films and what makes that work so much fun.
The first animated movie I ever did was Beauty and the Beast, where I actually played little roles. I was in the chorus. I was one of Gaston's silly girls. I had my big solo in the opening number was Good Day. And then I did Jasmine in the two Aladdin sequels, The Swan Princess, a lot of people know me from, and of course Anastasia, which was probably my favorite animated movie I've ever done. There's something that is so rewarding about knowing that when you do an animated movie, how it touches so many people. I never realized it until years later. I have people, I'll sing something from Anastasia and they'll like start crying. They'll go, oh my God, that's the soundtrack to my childhood. And I think because I was so shy growing up and I would only sing like in the shower or something when people would, you know, leave the house. When you record an album or an animated movie, you're in a little booth. It's very small. It's just you. You're listening to the orchestra and your headphones. But there's something very safe for me. I love the privacy. It's a very intense experience doing an animated movie and recording it. But I love it. And it's so incredibly rewarding.
Do you actually get into the head of the animated character when you're doing this?
Yes, you try to. Often what happens is they'll give you a sketch, just, you know, something to see so you can imagine what is happening. Very rarely do you get to read the script ahead of time. In the case of Anastasia, I was doing the singing voice for Meg Ryan, who was doing the speaking voice of the title character. And they didn't seem terribly concerned that I matched her, but I remember the day of the first recording, and this was over 20 years ago, I rented Sleepless in Seattle, and I remember recording like a scene on my Walkman and listening to her voice just to get it in my head, you know, because I knew I would be matching her. But usually, with the exception of like the storyboard drawings they might give you, a lot of it, you just use your imagination.
Yeah. Will audiences leave the theater really knowing Liz Calloway?
Absolutely. Anytime I perform, I want to give the audience a wonderful evening of great music, but I also want the audience to feel like they just had dinner with me. I just kind of want them to know me, and I think they will.
Broadway superstar Liz Calloway, thanks so much, and enjoy New Orleans.
I can't wait. Thank you.
Mark Cortali presents Broadway at NOCA with Liz Calloway and special guest Brian Batt, hosted by music director Seth Rudetsky, Saturday, January 11th, 8 p.m. at NOCA, 2800 Charter Street. More info is online at BroadwayNOLA.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The 6th annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival swings into high gear next week in venues across the city. The 5-day multimedia celebration of life and the legacy of the NEA Jazz Master will feature performances by a star-studded cast of New Orleans artists and internationally known special guests, including legendary singer Maria Muldaur. Her 2018 Grammy-nominated CD, Don't You Feel My Leg, pays homage to the music of Lulu and Danny Barker. She joins us now by phone. Hello, Maria.
Hi there, Diane.
Congratulations on your Grammy nomination.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been nominated 6 times, but getting a nomination for my tribute to Blue Lou and Danny Barker was especially meaningful to me.
Over the course of his 70-year-plus career, Danny Barker has mentored many musicians, many who have gone on to stardom. Tell me, how did your paths cross?
Well, way back in the day, in like 1973, I was out in L.A. making my first solo album. So we were just doing a very eclectic album of all sorts of different roots music. And I also was just thrilled and privileged to be in the studio with Dr. John, may he rest in peace. And so he was playing piano on a lot of tracks, and he not only brought his great piano playing to the recording sessions, but he also had a lot of great and creative ideas. And one day he came shuffling into the studio and said, "Hey, Maria, I think I got a cool song for you." So he proceeded to pull out a little cassette and play Blue Lou Barker singing Don't You Feel My Leg. And I thought it was a cute tune, and so did the producer. So we put it on the record, and the record went on to have a weird little quirky song called Midnight at the Oasis.
Yes.
About a camel, go figure. That became not just a hit in the States, but internationally and just all over the place. And I got a couple of Grammy nominations for that, and also, you know, was on the cover of Rolling Stone and all this. Well, because their song was on this big-selling album, they were due a royalty check. And so we prepared the first royalty check for them and contacted the publishing company, who got back to us and said, "Oh, they're deceased. Send the money to us." So we told Mac about that, and he said, "Deceased." He said, "The heck they are. I just seen them down on Bergen Street 2 weeks ago." So with his help, we got the correct contact info and sent them the first of what would be many, many royalty checks, for which they were very grateful because they were already in their 60s. And so it meant a lot to them. And when I went to New Orleans to perform, I invited them to the show, and that began a wonderful friendship. They were both such wonderful people, and Danny regaled us with all his great stories of all his various musical adventures. And so every time I go to New Orleans, I would get in touch with them and go visit them. It meant a lot to me, their friendship. I learned so much about New Orleans music from Danny. It's a friendship I'll cherish always. So I was thrilled when a few years ago, Detroit Brooks got in touch with me and asked, would I like to do a show paying tribute to Blue Lou Barker? And I jumped at the chance. We did the show at the Palm Court, which was their favorite hangout. And people came rushing. People loved the show. Oh, I have to back up and say this. In preparation for that show, I started looking for enough of their material to cover two long sets, and discovered to my delight and surprise that they had written and recorded dozens and dozens of songs equally naughty and bawdy and clever and funny as Don't You Feel My Leg. And what a treasure trove of great material. So putting that together, we did the concert, and afterwards people came rushing up to the CD table and said, which one has all those naughty songs we just heard? And at that moment, I realized that we should record this stuff and put it out and share this great, fun material with a lot of people.
Don't you feel my leg? Don't you feel my leg? 'Cause if you feel my leg, you might want to feel my thigh. If you feel my thigh, you're gonna go too high. So don't you feel my leg?
When you think about the fact that they wrote and recorded these songs in a much more socially restrictive era, you just realize what avant-garde hipsters they were.
I mean, yes, they were.
In the repertoire, like Loan Me Your Husband and Bow-Legged Daddy and, you know, songs like that. What I love about them is they're tongue-in-cheek. They're really funny, very cleverly written. And they talk about sexuality in a very playful way that's never vulgar. It's suggestive, but it leaves the rest of it to the imagination of the listener. So somebody once said, imagination is the greatest aphrodisiac. So I loved performing these songs, even though they were written, God, you know, about almost 80 years ago, because it continues to delight audiences. Here we are in 2020, and people still love to hear it. And to think this vintage gal could take a bunch of vintage tunes and do an album and get a Grammy nomination is just a tribute to the enduring quality of these great songs.
Tell us more about your friendship with Blue Lou Barker.
I had the opportunity to sing with her on several occasions. She came to Tipitina's a few times when I was playing there. When she became ill, I used to go visit her, and Danny would get all duded up and go out with his banjo and guitar and go do some gigs on Bourbon Street, and then he'd come back and fix her supper. And they were just such a loving couple. At that point, they had been married about 60 years, and I asked them the secret of why they were still so in love. And he said with a twinkle in his eye, that's easy. I just tell her, yes, dear, and tell her she's right. And, you know, in other words, he recognized the wisdom of being non-confrontational. That was how he did it, which was, you know, very sage, almost Zen wisdom.
He knew how to keep a happy home.
Exactly. Which was full of great memorabilia, by the way. I used to love to go look at the photos and scrapbooks of all the people he worked with, like Cab Calloway, Louis Armstrong, Billie Holiday.
Now, how did you fall for the city of New Orleans?
How do you not fall for the city of New Orleans? I mean, music is just infused through the very oxygen that everybody breathes there. You just walk down the street, you hear somebody playing the trumpet from far away, you go past a club. There's music going on 24/7. So for a woman whose whole motivation for living has been music, I consider it my musical home, although my furniture is still in California, but my spiritual and musical home is in New Orleans.
Now, you have a performance during the Danny Barker Festival at Snug Harbor. How will the evening unfold? What can we look forward to?
We're going to do two shows, 8 and 10, and it's going to basically be the tunes that I put together for the album. And there's just one fun song after another. And the band consists of the great Dave Torkanowski, who is my favorite living piano player. And I've worked with him a whole bunch over the years. We've probably done at least 6 or more albums together and innumerable gigs. When he's at the helm, I know the music's going to be great. So he'll be on piano, Chris Atkins on guitar, Roderick Paulin on saxophone, and other notables. It's going to be a presentation of the wonderful music of Blue Lou and Danny Barker, played by these wonderful New Orleans musicians. I toured with this show using different musicians, but after the album came out, I toured for quite a few months with it. And wherever I go, people just love it. It's fun, happy music. And God knows in these dark times, we need some of that, don't you think?
Why is it important for you to play a role in keeping the Barker's legacy alive?
Well, I feel that Danny Barker himself felt it was very important to preserve the heritage of our great American musical traditions. And he did so much to share that, especially with young people, but with everyone. And he was very generous with his time, and he kind of had a vision of the fact that this great music should be carried forward. So that's kind of my main motivation, too. And I think that this festival is a vehicle to keep his dream alive. So I'm very honored to be asked to participate.
Acclaimed vocalist Maria Muldaur, thank you for talking with me. This has been great.
Okay, cool. All right, well, all right. Have a good day, and I'll see you down there soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now listen here, gal. You're talking so big. Lay off of my guy or I'll rip off your wig. You ain't doing any better. You're just making conversation. You ain't doing any better, so leave my man alone. My guy ain't so handsome. He gambles a lot. He comes to see me cause he likes what I got. You ain't doing any better. You're just gabbing through your bonnet. You ain't doing any better, so leave my man alone.
Maria Muldaur's tribute to Blue Lou and Danny Barker will take place Saturday, January 18th at Snug Harbor. The 6th annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival runs January 15th through 19th in venues across the city. More info is online at DannyBarkerFestival.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Le Petit Theatre. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.